Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Scientific Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Berry, joined by the one, the only Mr. Darren Shrewsberry Jr. is in. We have made it back for 2 weeks in a row. Thought we were going to do bi-weekly things. Why the hell did you not stop me when I said we should do it tonight? Why the hell did you agree to do it tonight?
No idea. I think I totally forgot last week, and I was just like, oh, yeah, hey, I figured I'd ask since we mentioned that yesterday wasn't doable anyway. So I was like, oh, well. Might as well, you know what I mean? Stay on top of things.
Yes. Stay on top of things. I like how you think. Well, we might like how West Virginia University thinks because they've given Neil Brown a one-year extension to the 2027 season. And as I told you when this happened, I am both completely okay with and pleased by this. I'm pleased because I think he earned a contract extension. I don't believe he earned a 10-year deal. I think it's good to have him tied through pretty much this recruiting class's time here at WVU, assuming they all stay, which is not a good is not always a fair assumption nowadays, which is sad, but it's true. So my thing is, okay, you got him locked up, he earned it, but you've also given yourself an out to where if something does go wrong or you're not pleased where the program is going, you have an out now. You're not tied to him for 10 years, and you're on the hook for $1 billion. This is a smart move by the university. Lock him up, but give yourself a way out if things start to go south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, the first thing I thought of, and this is because I was thinking about Alabama, am I wrong in thinking the Alabama WVU series is 2026 and 2027?
No.
I think 26 there in Morgantown, 27 we go down there.
I'll double check because I pop open the article. It's crazy that that was announced 5 years ago.
Right.
Like, just over 5 years ago. Yes, beginning in 2026, Morgantown and then Alabama. Yep, 26, 27.
Knew it. Okay, so he's got himself through that series, we suppose. He can get fired in Tuscaloosa. Let's hope not. Let's hope not. But this, like I said, this is a sensible, reasonable, smart decision by the university. Kudos to Ben Baker for getting it done. And kudos to Neil Brown for realizing, hey, you got to go and you got to prove, you got to do more to earn like a 10-year deal. Take the money and go get it, right? Mm-hmm. So good for Neil Brown. Now, I have to ask this question. If they go 10-2, make the Big 12 championship game, do you give them another deal after that?
Oh, boy. It's possible. I think if you're seeing that consistent growth, it wouldn't be far-fetched to see.
I agree. So, goodness, why am I yawning? Why am I yawning? Anyway, let us move on to the National Football League, where we have a very interesting situation out of Denver. The Broncos straight up cut Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem for the Broncos because they're on the hook for $85 million in dead money.
Yep.
He's getting $35.4 mil against the cap. They added $49.6 mil to their cap just by cutting him. Mm-hmm. So I will ask you this. Number one, are you surprised? And number two, are you concerned for the health of the Denver Broncos?
No and yes, in that order. No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, given the bullshit that occurred towards the end of last season for sitting him to guarantee that he's not injured such that they don't pay him more money, we all knew that was bullshit. We all knew it was simply, we just don't want him on our team anymore. And you're just choosing the most bullshit political answer possible. So we knew he was gone from that moment. and to then willingly eat up an additional nearly $50 million in cap space to cut him, because you really don't want him. Really, it is certainly not an up. It is certainly a very strong uphill battle. It's more than a hill. It's up mountain battle for this team, for this organization.
Well, they are in the Rocky Mountains. They should be okay with that.
They should be, yes. It's if there was ever a you ever see the, and I don't mean to do this just to make any political point. I mean to do this as a meme that occurs. So have you ever seen the articles or the headlines of some paper writing something about, let's say, Joe Biden, for example, and they go, oh yeah, this good thing happened, here is why the Democrats should be in disarray, or something like that, and then,
yeah,
and they just get memed to existence where they just headline Dems in disarray, the end.
Yeah.
Denver in disarray.
Congratulations, Sean Payton is a meme.
And we know that he wasn't cut because he was playing like shit. He did the first season, but the second season he played quite well. He started to kind of show inklings of his former self, but he was significantly better than the year before, and he was far and away. He was the farthest thing, almost nearly the farthest thing away from the major problem in that team. So it really comes down to there must have just been so much butting of heads in some way, shape, or form for them to just go, yeah, we're going to eat $50 million in cap space to get you out of here. And that just screams more problems than... more underlying problems.
Amazingly, the Broncos are only $2.6 million above the cap right now. Amazingly.
Wow.
But they also cut someone today. So.
Justin Simmons, I think. I think that saves them like $10 million.
Yeah, so they walked it down a little bit. They do have dead cap, non-active roster cap charges. They have $13 million of this. Randy Gregory, they're paying 7.12. Justin Simmons, 3.72. Brandon McManus, 1.2. Frank Clark, 1.125. And then Montrell Washington, $157,000. Huh. But here's the thing. Russell Wilson, still, he's on the active roster for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because this cutting won't become official until the league year starts. He's still on the active roster. He's the highest paid player. You know who the second highest paid player is in the Broncos?
I do not.
Left tackle Garrett Bowles makes $20 million on the cap.
Huh.
I'm not saying he's not worth it, but if you're paying an offensive lineman as the second highest, as will be the highest paid player on the team once the quarterback departs, that's something.
Yep.
I don't know what the word is, but it's something.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of our aforementioned quarterback here, the question we've been asking is, who the hell is going to be stupid enough to take him in? Well, it turns out that might be the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to meet with him once the new league year starts, and they can officially meet with him without being considered tampering.
Mm-hmm.
So I will ask you this. Russ in Pittsburgh, can you see it?
I'll say what I said to my coworker today. If anybody can make Mike Tomlin could line up a roster of infants and Rotten Tomatoes and somehow get into the playoffs. So I think, and I say this as Russell Wilson is a significant upgrade to what they've been having in the Pittsburgh locker room. Do I absolutely think that would solve all of the problems? No, not at all. But I think something could be done there, at least to get Mason Rudolph out of the conversation, because I'm sick and tired of hearing his name. It's not an entirely unreasonable thing to see happening. I think Russell's just going to have to, and his agent are just, if he has an agent, I don't know, some people don't go with agents, but the point is, they're just going to have to accept the fact that he's not worth the money that they paid him in Denver, and he shouldn't expect that anymore. I think his days of being considered for that amount of money are honestly long gone, and he should just be happy to still be in the league, given the wild ride that has been the last couple of years.
Well, let me ask you this. Where does Russell Wilson rank in the NFL quarterback hierarchy right now? I don't even need a number. I just need like a tier. Where is he in this league?
I'd say like mid to upper mid. Probably a little more closer to upper mid, but I don't think he's in that upper, that full on upper tier. I put my tiers at like there's mid, like there's the upper mid, up, and then like elite. I think I would put him very in the bottom of the upper mid.
Okay, that's fair. So given that answer, new question. Let's just say he signs for the Steelers. Who starts week one? Kenny Pickett or Russell Wilson?
If you've picked him up right as soon as it's possible to pick him up, I'd probably say Russell. Because yeah. I mean,
what if you give him a league minimum deal?
If you're giving him a league minimum deal, then hell, that's funny because I even mentioned the possibility of going. Well, he's cut now. He's not beholden to any money. They could offer him league minimum, and if he wants to play, he's got to take it. But if he's on a league minimum contract, shit, he could ride the bench for all I care. I mean, if they think Kenny Pickett's a worthy enough. If they think Kenny Pickett is an upgrade in any way, or Mason Rudolph, or upgrades in any way over Russell Wilson, then I'm going to actually start questioning Mike Tomlin's sanity. Okay, assuming he lands on the roster, of course. If he doesn't land on the roster, then whatever.
Discussion has been completely worthless.
Exactly. So that's a money problem then.
Yeah. I'm looking at over the cap, and I was just looking. Let's just transition here because I was looking at the Patriots situation. I want you to take a guess. Who has the highest cap hit on the 2024 Patriots as of right now?
I'm going to say only because I know he got a new contract, but I don't remember the numbers. I'm just going to say Judon.
Correct. 14.65.85 million.
Well then.
Kyle Duggar is the highest paid player in base salary, getting 13.8.815 million. And that's his cap hit. So Judon, for his signing bonus and his roster bonus and all that stuff, that equals up to that $14.65 million. But still, he's not hurting. Neither of them are hurting.
Yeah.
But the Patriots also have a bleep ton of cap space. They have $88.5 million as of right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's when you account for the J.C. Jackson drop, and I think it put them – 97 or like basically 100, but after that move, it put them at number one in free cap space.
Well, they're now number two. The Commanders have about $3 million more.
Huh. What some moves, too, that shifted theirs. Because I know they signed, they just signed Zach Oates.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that wouldn't lower the cap space. But,
No, I would like to think not.
But point being is that move code.
I'll take a guess as to who the team with the most is the most over the cap right now.
Team that is most over the cap. Weren't the Saints the ones that originally started off that way?
Correct, but they have negotiated themselves back down. They are now third, third last. It's a team that I guarantee you you're not going to expect, but I'm still going to make you guess. Because I'm a nice guy like that.
Trying to remember who all who else was dealing with. Cincinnati.
No. The Miami Dolphins are $20.4 million over the cap.
Well, then.
Then it's the Chargers at 20.1, then the Saints at 17.2, Cowboys 10.6, Ravens 10.03, Bills at 9.0, Broncos at 2, and then the 49ers are, how do you do this? $285,000 over the cap. How do you get it down to like that small?
They gave the punter a little extra money?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. What did McAfee keep saying? Punters are people too?
Punters are people too.
Punters are... Check this out. As of right now, the Patriots for next year have $204 million in cap space.
Jeez.
Let's go load up and win a championship, boys. 2026, $263 million in cap. And then 2027, where do we fall? 2027, the Patriots have...
So they have next to no.
No one signed, so we have all the cap space in the world.
I was going to say, they must have everyone's contracts expiring in the next couple of years.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, well, Mayo may actually have to own up to that. We're going to back the Brinks truck up. He may have to. So let's make note of a few of one signing that kind of affects Patriot land. And then there's not really that many others that go by. I do want to get into Jonnu Smith is the newest member of the Miami Dolphins. Is that a good fit to you?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many weapons in that receiving core that I just don't really see. Like, he was already barely used. He's just finishing up with Atlanta, right? He was already barely used in Atlanta, from what I can recall. And they already had a receiving core. You were like, huh? So he couldn't stand out in that receiving core. I can't imagine he's going to do anything or be able to do anything to stand out in this receiving core. But in terms of like sheer fundamental style of play, that would require much further in-depth analysis that you would probably be the one to generally have.
Well, actually, I have an opinion on that. Remember what I criticized the Dolphins for being after they lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs? Is that they're not tough enough. Mm-hmm. They can't finish. What was Jonnu Smith's main what was everyone complaining about when he was the Patriots? He wasn't being targeted, couldn't catch. What did I always say? The guy can block.
Yeah, he's a very good blocker.
This feels like the Dolphins going, okay, we see you. We're going to toughen up. We're going to have more depth. And so if someone goes down the receiving core, we do have another option that can catch. But Jonnu Smith is going to be asked to block, get his hands dirty, and go in there and help them finish games. And I say this, whether they do it in free agency or they do it in the draft, if they get a downhill, nose-in-the-dirt runner, they're going to be almost impossible to beat.
Yeah, I do not disagree with that.
That's when I saw they got Jonnu. I was like, "That's they clearly saw the same thing I did, and they're going to fix it, which is what you should do." Now, this is something I was going to call like our featured discussion, because that's kind of what we do almost. We have like one topic that kind of gets most of the things. So let's talk about this. Over the weekend, LAFC and Real Salt Lake in Major League Soccer played a game in Salt Lake City, and it was snowing because it's February in Utah and it snows. I don't know if anyone else is aware of that, but it does sometimes snow in Utah in this time of year. So the thing that I saw was Steve Cherundolo, former U.S. men's national team captain and current LAFC manager, was not thrilled that they played in the snow, and he thought the game should not have been played, and he made his opinion known. Well, it turns out you can make your opinion known, but you'd better be willing to fork over like 10 grand to the league office, because they fined him $10,000 for violating the league's public criticism policy. Yes, that is a thing. Essentially, do not criticize MLS or make statements that are detrimental to your to the club or the league. And so, Darren, I will ask you this. Not necessarily the specifics about the playing in the snow. You didn't watch the game. You don't follow MLS. But it's an interesting discussion because I've been thinking about this for a while. Should managers and players be allowed to criticize and speak freely about what they believe the league is or isn't doing without fear of repercussion, unless it was something incredibly bad, like, oh, I'm calling the league, I'm calling the commissioner a criminal, he's never done anything wrong.
Yeah.
That kind of thing I get. But should you be allowed to go, yeah, I don't think we should have played without having to fork over 10 grand?
Yeah, I think that's exactly my thoughts. I say this with, you know, people will immediately come out, and I know it's in the comments, without even having opened a post, I know it's in the comments of, free speech, something, blah, blah, blah. Well, guys, unfortunately, that fortunately or unfortunately, however one sees it, the soccer organization at large that we're discussing,
MLS.
Yeah, it's not the federal government. They are quite literally privy to punish you for whatever the hell they want you to whatever the hell they want. Similar as Twitter and Facebook and Instagram can write in their terms of service that you can't call someone an idiot or something, and they can ban you for it if they wanted. So in that regard, they technically have every right to punish you for that. However, with that being said, I do think that line should be drawn. This guy was simply saying, why I find it mind blowing that a soccer game was being played in the snow. I saw headlines that was played, and then I also saw that right along the headlines of the United States women's team and Canada facing off in basically a goddamn river.
Yeah,
and that question, like, I was not aware that anyone contemplated playing a football match in that inclement of weather. It never once crossed my mind that anyone entertained that idea. So for a coach to have that sentiment and go, yeah, why the hell are we playing in this snow? I think that is along the lines of something that's like, this is just common sense. Why this shouldn't be played? This isn't American football where they don't give a damn what the weather is. Stares at Buffalo. I do think that there should be some leeway in the types of criticism. Because if you don't hear it publicly, you should be hearing it privately. But him saying it publicly is pretty much what I would imagine a majority of the fans watching would have been saying, like, why the hell is this game being played? And in the same way with the NFL, where it's like, you know, if the refs made a clear and egregious error, if the refs were just not on top of their game, I have every right to say that they were not on top of their game. The refs should not be babied. If the refs screwed up when their job is to manage the rules and regulations of this game, and they screwed it up, I should be able to tell you screwed up within reasonable guidelines of not going, hey, this guy's a fucking idiot, get him off of here. I could say it in a much more effective way while still basically getting the point across that you're a fucking idiot. Like, there are tactful ways to do that.
See, here's the thing. Steve Cherundolo was not in the team when the U.S. beat Costa Rica in 2013 in a game played at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Colorado for the 2014 World Cup qualifying cycle. But in that game, the U.S. beat Costa Rica 1-0. It was 28 degrees outside with snow falling pretty heavily throughout the whole game. And it's called the Snow Classico in American soccer lore. Steve Cherundolo may not have been in the team that day, but he no doubt knows that several people who were. So he knows it's not uncommon for soccer to be played in that. He's probably mad because his team didn't perform as well. And he does have a point about players in terms of getting injured. He does have a point about that, saying, yeah, people can get hurt, and he's not wrong. But to be completely like, well, why are we playing this? Well, you know why we're playing this, because you've been there. Or if you weren't there, like he wasn't, just call up like half your teammates in the U.S. Men's National League of the Year. They were there. Call Clint Dempsey, who scored the goal that day. But you're also right that, you know, I believe that players should – coaches should be able to say whatever they want. Players – this is going to sound stupid, but to a lesser degree, because I think coaches are – the majority of coaches are probably going to want to be more in tune to what's going on league-wide than players will be on a higher level. So maybe they might have a better run. It's like, okay, I've been there. I've done that. I know people who have done that. Players may not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they like, okay, I have a little more background to speak on this than a player does. So I'm not in favor of players saying something to me that I may not have the information about. But in general, you should be able to criticize the league office for something. Because here's the thing. We're all supposed to be equals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if we consider there's an owner and there's a general manager. But yes, I do believe in a hierarchy, but I also believe if the players walk out, you either have to get replacement players, or the league doesn't happen. So players are just as important a part of this as anything, and they should be able to have an opinion and voice it.
Mm-hmm.
Not hard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, whether that's through a union, a rep, or just being able to say it. I mean, technically, no one's saying you can't say it. I can say it, and I pay you $10,000 to say it. I mean, if I'm willing to fork up 10 grand every time I gotta say gotta tell you you're an idiot, okay. This is also MLS, and I can't imagine that many MLS players are making ungodly amounts of money to be able to be doing that.
No, because MLS has a thing, it's called a designated player rule. Basically, for players like David Beckham or Lionel Messi or something like that, you have three designated player spots where these three players can make, more than the average MLS salary. Everyone else gets, it's a salary. Everyone else gets that. Like, you can't go above that.
Mm-hmm.
And MLS, while getting a lot more rich because of its contract it signed with Apple for TV rights, is nowhere near the NFL or even the NHL.
Yeah.
So they, 10 grand still means something to most MLS footballers.
Mm-hmm. but there's a line, and I think this things along the lines of just going, hey, why the hell do we play in this weather? No one even thought to have a discussion of should we. That, I think, is a bit egregious. That does border the lines of dictatorial, in a way.
Breaking news, the NFL Institute's a public criticism policy. You can't speak out against Goodell anymore.
Oh boy.
We both know that's coming now, right?
Probably, yeah.
Probably. Yeah. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. Give me your money. You're fine. You just find me. You just find me 10 grand.
Yep.
Which is bad because I don't have 10 grand.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm screwed. Okay. Well, let's move on to what we learned this week. I will go first. I actually watched a documentary on the, basically it was the history of ice cream, pretty much. Well, mixing stuff in with your ice cream. And I did not know that the Dairy Queen Blizzard was created in response to Ben and Jerry's.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'm going to trace this whole thing back. Late 70s, early 80s, I forget exactly when it was. This dude in Boston loves an ice cream sundae. But he wanted something to mix in with it. And so he sent his friends out to go get a candy bar. And they came back with a Heath bar. And he's like, I can't use this. It's too hard. Well, he chopped it up and he ground it up. He's like, okay, this ain't half bad. And in fact, I like it. So he quit his job as a taxi cab driver. And he went out and started an ice cream shop where he would actually mix in your candy of choice for you. Now, when we think mixing an ice cream, like an ice cream bar, we think of just like pouring the M&Ms into the ice cream and eating them like that, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Not him. He actually had a granite cutting board that he would use like spatula stuff to actually mix the stuff into the ice cream and then give it back to you.
Oh, kind of like Cold Stone or something. Of course,
yeah,
Cold Stone.
I'm exactly.
Sure then, but that's what I think of now.
Yes. Essentially, yes. And so that's where this idea came from. And so when Ben and Jerry were trying to figure out, well, how the hell are we going to make an ice cream stuff? They went to his shop and he taught them how to do it. And so they came in and they became what they are. And Dairy Queen was looking at it. And they were going, well, you've got this soft serve, but mixing in, they call it mix-ins, which is a perfect name for it, but I never heard that before. But mix-ins are really popular. Well, how are we going to do it? Well, some guy figured out that you can mix it in with a blender and they just became the Blizzard. But I also learned this is a twofer, that when Dairy Queen corporate signed off on it, they had to develop a new blender that could reach all the way to the bottom of the cup to make sure everything was mixed together, and then they had to install them in all of their stores nationwide. And so the moral of the story is that the Blizzard hadn't worked, Dairy Queen could have made a lot of money.
Yeah. And this, children, is why you do pilot regions.
Yes.
To make sure enough people actually want it.
Yes.
Like the lab-grown meat I mentioned a while back ago. That was approved by the FDA.
Always sneaking the damn FDA in there. What is it with you and your federal government? Oh, goodness
me. Speaking of federal government.
Oh, no.
So I knew that the number was large, but this is a very short one. But obviously, we're both aware the United States has a lot of nuclear weapons in stockpile. But do you know the actual number?
I do not.
3,700 nuclear weapons are stockpiled in the United States alone. And many of them are aging, such that their plutonium bowling ball fuel rods effectively need to be replaced. And the United States apparently is setting up a plan to do so.
I should hope so.
Because, yeah, we totally need 3,700 nukes lying around, but that is the rough number that exists in the United States, and that is United States owned nukes.
Whoa,
yeah,
that's bone chilling. Wow, goodness me. And here I thought I was going to end on a happy note, and you come in here and just drop that bombshell. No pun intended.
Fun fact, if you weren't aware, when I took the ASVAB for the Marines in high school.
You did.
And I had I now this was the practice ASVAB, but it still basically translates to the real ASVAB, because I think I took the regular ASVAB for the Army. I can't remember. I think I took two. But
it's high school. Who knows?
For the Marines, I scored high enough such that if I scored that on the real one, I would have qualified to work, been qualified to go into the MOS that works on nuclear submarines.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Which you couldn't have done this when you go because you told me where you were at. But it would have been cool.
Yeah.
Coming to you live from He Can't Tell Me Where, Darren Shrewsbury Jr. Oh, boy. All right. Well, I'm following the Penguins game on my phone, and they're down 5-0 at home to the Capitals.
Ooh.
And the Capitals are not making the playoffs. The Penguins are like 10 points out of the playoffs with like 20-something to play. They're out, effectively. So it's like, yeah, I'm depressed. So I'm going to get all I need to go do some like major self therapy. As in not watch the hockey game.
Yeah.
We are going to laugh tonight. We're not watching the State of the Union either. You know what? I will listen to what the president has to say. That's just, I'm American. But you know what I really like, the State of the Union is for me? When the Sergeant at Arms comes out and goes, is it a male Speaker of the House right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Johnson.
Okay.
Speaker, I forget his first name.
Because frankly, obviously I did.
Too many of them have occurred in the last 6 months for me to give a damn.
Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, the Sergeant at Arms, when the President is in the air, like, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a chill moment. Like, that's like, okay, this is cool. And after that, it gets downhill because then they take like 15 minutes to get down there because they're shaking everyone's hand. It's like, I don't need to see you doing that, but okay. Then you're going to talk for an hour, and I'm just like, I don't need to hear every word. I can just read the CNBC article tomorrow.
Yeah.
I can just read it on NBC News and be fine. I don't need to hear you go on and on and on and on and on. Because I was talking to Dad about this the other day. And I was like, when have you ever heard the president, like, they always, like, the State of our Union is, the answer is always good. When have you ever heard the president go, yep, guys, the union's bad. I can't say this, but we're really screwed. I can't, nothing we can do.
I immediately think how funny it would be if another meme reference, the president just comes in with a gun, cocks it. It's like, how's the country? Cox gun, country's fucked, runs away. It's like, what is it? The moon. The moon meme.
Oh, yeah.
Come back. How's
always
the moon?
Has been.
I was thinking of the one before it. How's the moon? Moon's fucked. Cox gun gets back on on rocket, launches back to the moon.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
But also, yes, the always has been meme perfectly applies here because, in your case, how's the country? It's good. Points gun to the back of the head. Always has been.
Secondary point. Have you ever watched the show Designated Survivor?
I have not, but you've explained the concept before.
It's a great show.
I am aware.
It's a great show. For those of you who don't know, it was on ABC for the first like 2 years. Netflix picked up for the third, and they brought it to a conclusion. Kiefer Sutherland plays the designated survivor. He's the HUD. Is it the HUD director or the HUD chairman? Is it the director, I think.
I forget.
Okay, he's in charge of HUD, and actually, I think it'll be director because there is no. It's not a board. It's just the Department of Health of Urban Development. So he's the director of HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And so he is the designated survivor. So if you don't know, when they do the State of the Union, everyone in the government is there except for one person who is an undisclosed location, away from everything, to where if something goes horribly wrong, they can assume the office of the presidency and they can begin to rebuild the country from there. And that's what this show goes off of. It goes off the premise that the worst thing did happen, and Kiefer Sutherland, whose character had no aspirations of being president, was happy being the HUD secretary, is now the president of the United States, being asked to rebuild the country under the most tragic of circumstances. And I am a big fan of Kiefer Sutherland. I had not watched anything of his prior, but I found that show was engaging. It was entertaining. It was suspenseful when it needed to be, and it was heartfelt when it needed to be. And I also found out Kiefer is a country singer, and my God, that man can sing. So I became all in on Kiefer Sutherland, even though with the way I talk, it's somehow hard to pronounce his name. But it's still good. And I was like, man, if you ever get a chance to sit down and watch it, it's on Netflix, the whole thing. But if you ever get a chance to sit and watch it, I recommend you do so, because it really does bring you in, and it's hard to get out of that grip. It's truly hard to get out of that grasp.
Sweet.
So that's our attempt to end this show on a positive note. Despite the premise of the show that I just mentioned. So we'll try it again next week to actually end on a positive note. So until next time, this has been season 4, episode 31 of the Scientific Ocean Podcast. Darren, take us home.
Adios, everybody.